McNulty's done incredibly well to get up above Cargill and find Bennett. It's into the box. McNulty, cut back for Roberts. It's Gary Roberts for Bobby. Bobby are leading in the fourth round of the FA Cup. Mark McNulty, but a good chance by Doyle. For McNulty on the edge. Mark McNulty, yeah, scores for Bobby. Smashes it past McCormack. Won by Doyle. Finished by the returning Mark McNulty. First left blood for Bobby. They're in dreamland early here at Bratton.
There's a through ball to Jamal Lowe. Jamal Lowe's onside. The flag stayed down. Jamal Lowe, nonchalant, fantastic, brilliant. Pompey will be promoted at this rate.
That is it. Pompey are champions. They've won League Two in the most dramatic of circumstances.
The PO4 podcast with Hugh Bunce, proud to be Pompey.
Pompey fans, and welcome to PO4cast episode 217. Well, what a game, what an atmosphere, and what a league position. Join the podcast today is Andy Mitchmore. How are you, Andy?
Hello, Bunce. Yeah, strong weekend, strong week. Result, everything we wanted from the weekend. And yeah, got my Wickham ticket, one of the lucky few. So it's been a good week, to be honest with you. Other than, yeah, not having a voice for most of Monday and half of Tuesday as a result of all the weekend stuff. Other than that, I can't complain. It's been pretty sick. It wasn't a bad Saturday, hey?
No, it was a great Saturday. PO4cast antics out for Matt's birthday. Can't believe so many people turned up, although he is a birthday man. He loves his birthday month. One of those friends, you know, he has to go away to a foreign country. He was off to Berlin. And then he has to go away with the boys. And then he has to have his family thing. So... talk about one of the boys who's there, though. It's Freddie Webb. How are you, Freddie?
Oh, I am not bad, Hugh. And yeah, what a weekend. My God. Brilliant result. Fantastic night out with the guys. Met some new mates who are fine old supporters. What a Saturday. An amazing Saturday.
Yeah, it was a good time all round, wasn't it? I think most of the city was pretty happy after that result and just the atmosphere. But Andy, what's going on in life outside of Pompey for you?
I don't know what you're angling towards. I genuinely don't. What have you got something in mind?
No, for once I meant that as a truthful, honest, open question. I mean, obviously you're going to watch Wales at some point or whatever.
That explains why I'm so confused by it. Yeah, a little bit gutted. I'm missing, I think it's the Peterborough away game because I'm going to Wales, Italy in the Six Nations, which is unfortunate. And I'm sure you guys have got plenty of little jibes about that one. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not used to being asked open and genuine questions on the podcast. There's normally some sort of agenda in play, so I don't know how to respond.
I help you out. You're a glory-seeking Welsh fan. That's why you're going to watch the Italy game.
That's oxymoronic. A glory-seeking Welsh fan isn't a thing. You're either a glory seeker or you're a Welsh fan. You absolutely cannot be both. Once every 20 years when we nick the Six Nations or get further than England in an international football tournament, and that's generous with once every 20 years. That's more like once every... 1958 to 2016. That's what, 58 years. Yeah, it's not the most glory-seeking way of life, but yeah, we're also terrible at rugby now. So does it get any better? I think
long may it continue. Apart from the Pompey Welsh contingent, which is sort of makes me not want to lay into Wales as much purely because of the Pompey contingent playing for Wales. But apart from that, you know, you still are a glory-seeking fan. Andorra away would be your next one you'll turn up to.
Andorra like away, yeah. Big Welsh day out singing Land of My Fathers in... I don't know why I started that because I don't know what the capital of Andorra is. Any shouts?
Well, Andy looks that up. Let's just get straight into it.
Andorra La Vella. La Vella. It's the largest city of Andorra in the East Pyrenees between France and Spain. It is also the name of the parish that surrounds the capital and also the name of my next big Wednesday night game for Wales away.
It's the only guaranteed win he can definitely go to. So he's not spending money going away unless he's playing Andorra, maybe Liechtenstein or someone like that. Who else can I lay into? Gibraltar.
Liechtenstein are a shout. On was it Kickoff 97 or something? It was like my first ever football game. We had the demo version on PC on like Windows 95. And the two international teams you could play as were San Marino and Liechtenstein. So I did know the Liechtenstein team fairly well at one point. Was it the Frey brothers or something? I don't know. But they had loads of people with the same surname. This has gone very sort of sweet podcast.
I was born in 1997, Andy. So
shut up, Freddie. No one cares.
I definitely don't know that side by that point.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, go row a boat over and conquer someone, your Viking. But let's get back into it and let's start the podcast. So first of all, we're going to review the game against Oxford. Following from that, we're going to talk about some bits of the news, including some injury updates and how we think that affects the squad. And then we speak to Tom from It's Not Orange podcast to preview everything to do with the game against Blackpool. But just before that, let's be honest, should have put this bit in first. We asked a question out to you guys and we said, how can we do things differently to not repeat that game against Blackpool? Which is probably why I've got confused. And finally, we'll be giving our score predictions. That was so smooth, boys. Let's start off there. Let's
seamless.
Get... exactly.
117th time is the charm.
We're going to get there, people. Hang in there. Hang in there. We will perfect this eventually. First of all, though, let's get into the game against Oxford. We spoke about the atmosphere. We were all riled up for it as well. Although I had probably a few less pints than usual since we're going out all evening afterwards. Get to the game. It's a dream start, really, isn't it? And you get the throw in. It's a nice throw down the right-hand side. I think Rafty took it. One thing I want to point out here is Bishop's little flick with the chest to turn it around the corner there for Kamara. He plays it across to Lang. Lang gets the shot away, does well to get a shot away there. And probably Andy Mitchell-Moore, the keeper should have done better there, shouldn't he? But bam, bam, it's 1-0. And what a nice little secondary assist there for Colby Bishop.
Yeah, I think two main points on that. Firstly, is the urgency behind the throw that Rafferty takes, in that he runs over to take the throw and to try and keep some momentum going and catch Oxford almost, well, not on the break, but catch them unawares before they've had a chance to get into their banks. And then the Bishop chest off. I mean, how many times have we said this in the last few weeks? I think I literally said 3 weeks ago, because obviously this is all about me and a big I told you so. And all of our topics do come back to my hubris. So we did say a while ago, you know, the number of phases of play that Colby Bishop kicks off, like sometimes before the highlights reel begins, if you just watch those 3 minute highlight blocks back. But so many times recently, that ball forward, where Bishop takes either one touch or two touches under pressure facing away from goal and then sets up Kamara or Lang or Lane playing off him and it ends in a goal, is frankly ridiculous. And I don't know how all this assist stuff works because I'm not a metrics bloke, but I'd be interested to know how many goals he has been within the last three players to touch the ball of, where he hasn't directly got the assist himself, but has been in that final phase of play or has started that final phase of play where we've actually picked up the ball and driven at the goal rather than facing away from it. Because I think it would be spectacularly high. And in terms of the keeper, yes, dreadful. To be frank, I don't think there's too much analysing of the keeper here. He's got to get his body behind it. If you mess your hands up, it hits your body and goes out. You just have to get anything behind it, like multiple lines of defence. And he very much doesn't. And yeah, dream start.
Yeah, I mean, I actually had to double check for people around me that Simon Eastwood hadn't started in goal.
I was waiting for that from you.
Yeah, I literally was like, is it Eastwood? Is it him? Is he in goal? No, it's not. But still, it was bad goalkeeping. And you're talking about him being involved in, Colby Bishop, sorry, being involved in games and assists and that kind of thing. But in other sports, like me and Fred both like NHL, they track secondary assists. So they count towards it as well. So the player who plays the puck to the next player. So I don't know if there's any stats for any out there that track secondary assists as such. Probably not. But in that case, if he was an ice hockey player, he'd be doing exceptionally well tallying up the assists there in different sports. So, yeah. Let's move on to the next goal then, obviously. Not long later on, Mosbert Harris gives it away in the centre of midfield. Obviously starting in a different position for him in this game, in the pivot there with Marlon Pack. Gives the ball away. Works its way through. Of course, it'd be Owen Dale. And he knows what's going to happen here. Raggett comes in, no nonsense. It's either going to be an exceptional challenge and go out for a throw-in, or it's going to be a penalty. Unfortunately, it was the latter. Goes down, and it's a stonewall penalty. And Cameron Brannigan is just one of those players that, you know, when he steps up to the spot, he's probably going to score.
Yeah, literally, you can't get more a stonewall penalty than that, to be fair. That was the big talking point for this game, Marsbert Harris playing in a double period, because Messina looked at Owen Moxon's disciplinary record. I think he was possibly up for suspension. And the cutoff point was about 37 games. So I think if he got one or two more yellow cards, he would then be suspended for a few games due to his term at Carlisle. So he rolled the dice and played Pert Harris deeper. And when when I spoke to a Forest Green fan, he says that he does put himself out there a little bit and does press. So that made me think, it's not brilliant him playing deeper, but it wouldn't be horrendous if he's able to actually put his foot in an awful lot and recycle the ball. But definitely in the first half an hour, I think he really struggled. He didn't have as much time on the ball as he would have liked. And I think that was an attempt at a hospital pass back to Sean Raggett when he received the ball, as the other midfielders were immediately on him. And then, yeah, through ball through to Owendale. And I think it would have been nice if instead of committing, Raggett just closed the angle and tried to make the chance just not as upfront, you know, not as clear, because he was sort of moving away from goal. He could have hit it, obviously, across the keeper. But if it was from an angle, that opportunity wouldn't have been anywhere near as clear as a penalty.
It is Owendale as well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, fair enough. But no, Raggett saw him and basically tried to commit into the challenge and got nowhere near it, unfortunately. I thought it was a bit of poor play all round, unfortunately, and sort of knocked the stuffing out of Pompey's very bright start.
Yeah, you talked about Pat Harris then, the central role. I thought he was fine with the balls in front of him when he was playing the ball forwards. It was more just his sort of like positioning off the ball, being in the right position to receive the ball there and being defensively in the right position. I did see in this game Rafferty sort of organising him quite a lot, even from throw-ins and stuff, pointing like, you need to be here or that kind of thing. And whilst you sort of expect that, especially a player who's, you know, come not into senior football, he's played a bit, obviously, but it's not like this is his position. He's played a lot and in a high-pressure game. So it's definitely not criticising him, but I'm not taken to that sort of that partnership there. But let's talk about Rafferty quickly, because he had an exceptional game in this. And before we come on to different chances going forward, I think Rafferty did some really important blocks in this game, as well as I said, helping organise the team, the passion, and we'll come on a bit later to that sliding challenge at the end. But Andy, what's your overall thoughts on how well Joe Rafferty played in this game?
Yeah, absolutely. As you've already mentioned, it was clear that he was giving instructions at times in the first half in particular and helping Miles Pert-Harris out in terms of positioning, in terms of where to be when we were defending throw-ins or defending set pieces, which was really good to see. I think one of the things we struggled with in that first game against Oxford at the Kassam a few weeks ago, where Rafferty was missing and we were forced to go three at the back in the first half, we didn't really negate Oxford's attacking threat too well. In the it's Tyler Bury who was injured for this game. He essentially ran the show down there right in the game where we played it for Kassam. And Lee on from left back, Greg Lee, again had a lot of joy down that left hand side in the Kassam game. And I felt like with Rafferty there playing four at the back, it just gave us so much more stability and solidity. And having Ogilvy left back and Rafferty at right back, it just cancelled out so much of the attacking threat that gave us issues at times in the reverse fixture that was quite recently at the Kassam. And I think having Rafferty at right back gives more freedom to the players further forward, because you don't need to check over your shoulder quite as much as we probably did with, you know, that away game, Kamara playing on the right and had Devlin behind him before he got injured. And then I think Shocknessy playing right centre-back in a three. And it just meant that Kamara got zero luck in that first half because Greg Lee just didn't give him an inch and Kamara couldn't really impact on the game until the second half when he cut inside more. And in this game, Kamara had way more joy cutting inside. And I think testament to Kamara, to be fair, to come up against Lee again. And this time, I think, come off better over the 90 minutes. And I think so much of that does stem from Joe Rafferty being back in the side. Aside from his individual performance, just his presence on the pitch and the confidence he gives those around him, rather than, you know, Kamara looking over his shoulder and seeing Devlin playing right mid. And we all know that, you know, I rate Devlin pretty highly. It was his first game at right mid for us, I think, maybe second game at a push before he got injured. And it just didn't give us that freedom that we had in this game. So, yeah, excellent to see. Rafferty is a big miss when we don't have him playing, obviously.
Also, we did have quite a lot of chances in this game. And I think it's fair to say, a little bit unlucky not to to go ahead when Mark Harris picks the ball up and has a shot from outside the box. It comes cannons off the post. He sort of tries to whip it round Norris, beats him. And if that's an inch inside, that goes into the back of the net. I think that was his only shot, though, he had in this game, which does show you that some of the chances they had, apart from the couple of times they hit the woodwork, weren't necessarily as clear-cut. But yeah, I thought that was a good opportunity. And Freddie, do you think that's one of those things you ride your luck a little bit and this team then just finds a way to come back and win?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't think it was as one-sided as many people suggest, but Pompey did ride their luck in this game. Harris, whether they were hitting the post when it would have been a superb effort to score from there. Finn Stevens also had a pretty decent shot when he arrived late in the penalty area with a low cross. Norris did a decent save on there. I think the only other major chance was those, the two shots that Colby Bishop had. The first one was blocked, but then the second one was saved by Jamie Cumming in the corner. But Oxford caused Pompey a lot of problems in the wide areas between the fullbacks and the centre halves. They dominated the midfield a fair bit in the first half, and whenever they get the ball in the midfield, they send it to the wide areas, try and break the gaps and basically just ruin Pompey's straight back four and get people out of position. And Pompey struggled to deal with that at times. There was a lot going on there, and Oxford are a very good side. You could tell just by watching them, and I think Pompey getting this result was superb overall, considering how well Oxford played in the build-up mainly, but also Pompey not entirely being at their best, but not being dreadful either.
I think it says a lot that sounded like it was their best performance since Des Buckingham came in, from what their fans were saying on social media. Obviously, under Liam Manning, they were a very, very dangerous side and looking like they were big contenders for automatics earlier in the season. But since Buckingham has come in, that stalled a little bit. And yeah, for us to turn them over like that, albeit with, they hit the post twice, for us to turn over when it was the best version of themselves, I think is a big compliment to the side as well. It's not like we beat a playoff chasing side when they were having an off day. It's we beat a playoff chasing side when they were turning up probably the best they have in the last 3 to 4 months, which is another positive to take from it.
Yeah, I think Rafferty did well in this game as well, marking Josh Murphy, who's did very well, I thought, down the left-hand side for Ox in this game. And I believe he was the player who actually hit the bar in the second half, also hit the post in the second half. But yeah, so yeah, Rafferty had a really difficult game, I suppose, difficult task in this game, and in the end manages to come out on top. Let's flip it around to the second half. I want to know, Freddie, what you think was the change in momentum and a little bit going into the second half. And do you think it was any of the substitutions that made a difference? Obviously, we brought on Christian Sadie, and you can talk about maybe how that helped Pompey hold on to possession further up the pitch. But what are your takes on how we sort of changed this round a little bit?
I think a lot of it has to be put on the substitution of Christian Sadie, and it's very easy to say rather than picking a small thing in the play, but he offered so much when he came on. By the time Sadie was coming on, Callum Lang was hobbling a little bit after a challenge. He was on a booking, and Pompey were again losing it a little bit in the midfield. But when Sadie came on, he put some tackles in immediately, was able to progress the ball high, and that sort of built up Pompey an awful lot. Pompey's press in this game gradually increased throughout the game, right up until the second goal. Then it dropped off slightly. I think the average in this game, the average passes per defensive action, was 7.02, but that reached all the way up to 4 by the time Pompey scored their second. And that shows a lot of character, the fact they were able, even though they were struggling in the midfield a little bit, they were able to go out there in the second half and put their stamp on the game a little bit more, because Oxford had a fair number of chances in this. Not entirely. I think the expected goals over the entire game was interesting. Oxford having 2.1 expected goals, but with the 0.76 of the penalty, that's high, but it's not wildly so, and then Pompey ending up with 1.52 at the end of it overall, at any rate. Pompey were able to step up their game and get those chances, and it was pretty much entirely down to the high press and the midfield battle in the end, I think.
Yeah, massively. Let's just get into the last bit of this game then and talk about a few last bits then. Let's talk about the goal for Christian Sadie after coming on, making a big impact. Gets played out. Colby Bishop again in his secondary assist that we were talking about earlier on, getting involved, gets taken down. I thought the referee on a side note had a pretty appalling game in this one. Just doesn't seem to get a lot right in it, but does get this right. He plays the advantage, allows the ball to be played through to Sadie, who's, we know how strong he is, don't we, at holding off people, but he just glides and just rides through that challenge. I can't remember who it was, the Oxford defender, but he then hits the floor in anger that he doesn't manage to bring him down, because I don't see if you've seen it on the video, which I think is an underrated part of this goal. Just slams his hand on the floor, knows he's letting straight through. Paddy Lane looks like he's either calling for the ball or celebrating. I think he's probably celebrating already. Arms up in the air. He knows Christian's going to finish it. And it's a really cool finish from Christian Sadie, who maybe he's not as well known for his finishing as he is for his battling play.
Yeah, 100%. I think if we go slightly further back, one phase of play, the ball ricocheting off the corner flag to cause the attack. It's a game of small margins, isn't it? Oxford hit the post twice and we get that ricochet off the corner flag that ends up being a, whatever it would be, not a secondary assist, a quintuple assist or something.
It definitely started play at any rate.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, lovely ball forward. And as you say, referee, you say he got the two major decisions of the game right. That's the biggest compliment I can play. The biggest compliment I can pay him. He got the penalty decision for them right, and he did well to play advantage here. Outside of those two decisions, it was one of the worst displays I've seen by a referee this season. If players didn't go down, they didn't get the free kick. Like, he didn't give anything for any sort of attempt where the player then just tried to stay on their feet and not go down. Just didn't apparently think that was a free kick. Like, I mean, I seem to say this a lot. I don't think he's biased. I think he was just awful and played such an interrupted game. And it felt like one of those ones where he wanted to be the centre of attention. Just seemed to have that personality type. And it's Ben Toner. We've seen him before. I think he was also the one, was he the one that got injured earlier this season when the fan came on to run the line?
He was also the referee who sent Joe Morel off for the low kick.
Was he?
I believe so.
I didn't think he was he?
I thought he was, but I think I told everyone that when I was really drunk, so who knows if that's true or not.
I don't think he was. Fred, can you fact check that? I didn't think he was.
I'll have a look. Remind me, when,
I could be wrong.
What game was that?
Well, it was Oxford, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Hang on, I'll have a look.
Yeah, so, yeah, really poor game, but in terms of Sadie breaking through, yeah, I mean, clearly one of the nicest blokes in the squad, I think, and we all want him to score for many reasons, and that is, I mean, first Pompey goal to seal the winner against a playoff candidate in front of the Fratton end. It doesn't get a huge amount better. And he's just so strong, isn't he? Just built like an ox, off the ball, on the ball, whatever. And it's a lovely finish. Opens up his body, gives the keeper zero chance. Yeah, I don't really know what to add. It was just one of those explosions of emotion. There's got to be a pun there. An explomotion, if you will, or something along those lines. But yeah, big release of energy as soon as that went in. It was honestly slightly unexpected at that point in the game. I think Oxford had created half-decent chances and it had been, you know, a slightly nervy start to the second half. So when that hits the net, you're loving life. Serious noise, hey?
Yeah, I'll just double check. It was a different referee.
Sorry about that.
Sorry.
Your beer's down.
I remember, Hugh, I remember you just shouting it like halfway through the night when we were out. And I was like, fairly certain that's not true. Propaganda.
I believe my sources on that one. It just so happened that they were unreliable.
It just happened that your source had drunk 6 pints, 13 double vodka lemonades and 4 shots of tequila.
Yeah, exactly. Always fact check your sources, Jerno. You know, you should know this sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That citation needed if ever I saw it.
Well, there is something that is reliable and that we could all rely on. And it's this upcoming segment of Guess the XG.
Guess the XG.
And obviously, we're going to look at the key points of this game, Christian Sadie's goal. Can you tell us what the expected goals rate is for Sadie's one-on-one finish? And I believe it's Andy's turn to go first.
It is. Let's make this snappy.
Yeah, happy to. Okay, so this is from the point that the ball leaves his foot, right, Fred? Yep, cool. Sorry, I wasn't looking at you. Yeah, so you've got a player closing him down from the left, but he is centre of the goal. It's just outside the box, which I'm assuming reduces the XG quite a lot. 0.26. I think I've lowballed, but 0.26. I've said it now.
I'm going to go lower, out of the box. I'm going to go 0.15.
Just had to do some quick maths there, but Andy is the closest with his 0.26.
Ooyakasha. Boom, 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 boom.
Y-Scouts had Sadie's chances, 0.22, which I think was harsh. I think it should be slightly higher than that, personally. But it was outside the box.
Quick maths.
But it was a lovely finish.
Yeah, I was 0.04 away. You're 0.07. What are you chatting about?
Yeah, no, that's what I was doing. That's why there was the pause, me doing my mental maths in my head.
That's why he's counting his fingers. Right. He's like, 0.1, 0.2.
I want to make a joke here about Freddie having ancestry on the Isle of Wight, so having the wrong number of figures to do that. I can say that because I lived on the Isle of Wight for 15 years. Don't cancel me.
Empowered Andy Mitchamore. All right. Let's just talk about the atmosphere very quickly. It was important to the end of the game. I thought Messini did well as well. He brings on Josh Martin. He brings on Yenge. He knows how important it is for the press there. So just to keep those fresh legs going, just to keep things going as we roll. It was, you can see it actually last night. I was watching the Barnsley Bolton game and I thought they needed to bring some fresh legs on to try and close that game out and try and stop Bolton from just sort of having that possession. And I think we did pretty well then to close the game out and bring those players on. Just add some pace, help that press. And the atmosphere was pretty good all game, but those last few minutes or last 5-10, whatever you want to say, it was pretty unbelievable really, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think just on... Well, firstly, I'm thrilled that this whole watching other League One fixtures to scout for the pod is catching on. It's contagious. Big fan of that. I split screening the game last... The Bolton-Barnsley game and the Charlton-Cheltenham game last night. I actually fell asleep before the final whistle of both. But anyway, back to our game. So I think massive credit to Messino here in terms of how he went about that last 10 minutes or so. Again, direct comparison to when we played at the Kassam. Last 10 minutes there, we're 2-1 up. And what do? We bring on a defensive... We bring on...
Towler.
Riley Towler. We brought on Riley Towler and then tried to see the game out and it all went Pete Tong. This game, exact same. 2-1 up, only a few minutes to go. And instead of doing the same, bringing on a central defender and trying to see the game out, we make sure we've got attacking options. You bring on a fresh-legged Yenge. You bring on a fresh-legged Josh Martin. As far as I can see, he's shown a learning curve there, where he's faced with a very similar situation, albeit, you know, the micro variables are slightly different because we're at home, et cetera, et cetera. But shows that he's learned that what we did last time out potentially didn't work and, you know, outcome measure-wise clearly didn't work and changed his approach. And as soon as he made those subs, regardless of what the outcome had been, I was really pleased because it showed that he changed his approach based on what had happened against the same team previously. I was a big fan of that. And yeah, the atmosphere for the last 10 was excellent. It's something we need to carry on for those last, what is it, five home games or whatever it is, six home games, something like that left, five home games. So yeah, great to be a part of. I lost my voice completely. It was an enjoyable 10 minutes or so. And that palpable relief when the final whistle goes is just so special, isn't it? I think just my final thought on this game would be the work ethic of players like Paddy Lane in this game. There were a couple of times where Oxford broke and Lane, having just sprinted forward in an attacking role, was then sprinting back and, you know, being essentially the last man or chasing into our own box defensively. And his repeated sprints in this game, again, I don't know if there's a stats for XRP, expected repeated sprints or something, Freddie, but like he got some serious miles in tracking back, maybe more so than I've previously seen, and just every yard that could be covered, he covered. And it wasn't just him, but that's the one that jumps to my mind.
Absolutely. Cracking atmosphere. Let's keep it going for the rest of the season. All right, let's move on. Freddie, do you want to take us through the bits on the news, please, and some injury updates?
Yeah, so we'll go through the injuries. We're supported by Jordan Cross, Tino Andrewin, Tom Lowry and Ben Stevenson are expected to return to training in less than a fortnight. Messino said they probably wouldn't rush them back, but it's good that there's actually progress being made there. Zach Swanson has been in full training this week and is in contention for the Blackpool game, so that's a brilliant option to have. Obviously, Rafferty's been playing superbly, but to have another right back on the bench is always nice. Andy Moon, in his interview with new signing Lee Evans, It was reported that Lee Evans is expected to be fully fit for Burton next Tuesday, but the midfielder himself said that he's more likely to be available for selection against Peterborough away. That's the injury updates, but there's something else that could determine the selection for one of the upcoming matches, the international call-ups. Barnsley on March 23rd. Cassini, Yenge and Paddy Lane are both expected to be called up by Australia and Northern Ireland, respectively. Barnsley could be without their top scorer, Devante Cole. He might be called up for Jamaica, and he scored an awful lot of goals this season. Has been one of the reasons why Barnsley have been on excellent form. And they're also expected to be without John Russell. But the key here is that since both clubs, only two players from each are expected to be called up, although that could change, then one team needs at least three players to be called up for it to be postponed. So that means that even with the changes, the game is likely to go ahead and not be rearranged unless there's any major changes with that one. And that's pretty much the injury news and the selection news, if you want to call it that, all wrapped up.
Am I expected to be watching Australia versus Lebanon at Parramatta as part of my role?
Yes, you're the international correspondent, so yes.
Fantastic news. Thrilled. I'm just trying to work out, I'll be landing in Australia 2 weeks after their home qualifier against Palestine. If that had been 2 weeks later, and that was in Western Sydney, I'd have been there for some live PO forecast scouting with a big Pompey flag to make Cassini feel at home, but I think I'm just going to miss that. I don't think they're going to have any qualifiers while I'm out there.
Fun fact, actually, Cassini Yenge's brother is also playing in the UK. He plays for Livingston, Tete Yenge, and he actually scored against Motherwell in a fairly recent game.
He used to play League One or League Two, didn't he? Because it was one of our match previews with, I can't remember, was it Northampton Town or someone like that recently, where their podcast host clarified for their listeners that we weren't talking about the Yenge that used to play for them, that it's his brother. So I think that Yenge also used to play League One or League Two football.
There you go. You learn something new every day. Let's get on to the next bit then. Cheers to that, Freddie. Before we get on to talking to you, Andy, about the Pompey women, just going to say thanks to James Leary, who bought us some coffees and buymecoffee.com. Thank you, James. We really appreciate it, mate.
Thanks, James. Jersey.
Yeah. He said, gents, thanks for the great podcast. Well, thanks to you, James. We really appreciate it, buddy. And I've managed to remember to do this in the middle of the podcast, boys, so I don't have to clip it and put it somewhere else. Here we go. That's how much we love you, James. Thank you, mate. Andy, take us away with the Pompey women, please, because they're actually doing all right.
You sound surprised as if they haven't had 13 league wins in a row. Yeah, stunning surprise. You know, ever since we started doing the weekly updates, they haven't lost a league game. So I think, again, there's something else we can take utter credit for. Yeah, another big result for them last weekend, so the day after our Oxford game, came from a goal down to score two in the last 5 minutes of normal time, both from Emma Jones. We were 1-0 down to Cardiff City, and to turn it around like that in the last five and win 2-1 is obviously excellent. Bounce back from losing to Newcastle United in the Cup the week before. So the ladies played at St James's Park and conceded last minute. So Newcastle are the top of the northern equivalent of the league that Pompey are in. So in their league, Newcastle have won 14 out of their 16 games. In our league, Pompey have won 15 out of their 16. So it's basically the two big hitters at this level. And in that Cup game, Pompey went down to a last minute winner for Newcastle United. So it's really good to see them bounce back so quickly. So yeah, Pompey have got five games left in the league season and are on 45 points from 16 games, ahead of hashtag United on 36 from 15. So if hashtag win their game in hand, they will be 6 points behind Pompey with five games remaining in the season for both of them. So things are still looking good for Jay Sadler and the women. Long may it continue. I'm thoroughly enjoying the enjoyable Sundays we're getting every single week at the moment as the ladies keep putting the wins together. Yes, 13 in a row in the league, which is quite impressive, really, isn't it? 39 points out of an available 39. You can't do a huge amount better than that with, again, quite frankly, a still obscene goal difference of 57 from 16 games, which that's fairly bonkers.
Obviously, the good women doing really well, and long may it continue. Right, let's get into the next bit now and let's talk about what you guys think. And thanks to everyone who messaged in. We really appreciate it. It does make the show. Sorry to everyone, I put this out a bit late. So if you didn't have time or see the post to write in, I apologize. It's my fault. Maybe Freddie's, but it's my fault. I'll take the blame for it 100%. We put a question out to you guys and we said, what do Pompey need to change compared to the last time out against Blackpool to avoid the same result? Pompey Kong meshes in and says, with no disrespect whatsoever regarding Joe Morrell, as I think he's a fantastic player, but I no longer fear us going down to 10 men during a game as much as I do with him in the team. Keep it at 11 men and I think we've got a great chance as we're in it until the red card in the 4-0. Andy Mitchell, I want to know what you think about Joe Morrell being a liability in the centre midfield and now he's gone. We're likely to complete this game out with 11 men.
That's Welsh slander and I'm not having it. Absolutely not. That's the worst email, worst response we've ever had. Give your head a wobble. No, obviously it is optimal to keep 11 men on the pitch. I think Morell has been unfortunate at times with being put in difficult positions in terms of, you know, the first yellow a lot of the time has been a tactical yellow that he's only had to make because of other mistakes within the team that have left him chasing back with the other team having a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-1, etc. And he's had to make the sensible decision. The second yellow cards have been a little bit more brainless at times. I will cede that. But I still think he's a net gain to the team. You're not going to get me saying a word otherwise. He's an international quality player. And I don't think that response in there is claiming that he isn't, which is reassuring. So I won't get full on Aggie. But yeah, I mean, Morel's red card record before he came to Pompey was very, very low. And he's just been given that enforcer role. And I think there was one of the red cards that was completely brainless, like just had a funny 5 seconds and forgot how to actually play football while you're on a yellow card. But for the most part, I think there have been mitigating factors for his reds. But yes, I would much rather we kept 11 people on the pitch. I think that's more advanced PO forecast analysis from us there.
Yeah, there have been lots of factors as to why Pompey had gone on an unbeaten streak for a while. And yes, the mid-double pivots played really well without Burrell, but I think even with him in the team, I think Pompey probably would have gone on that run anyway, I think.
Sean messaged in and says, play better. It's a good shout, Sean. We had no Pack or Ogilvy that day. Martin was starting with Abu in the middle, in front of Morel and Roppo. We're in a much better position. I can't imagine that Pack or Moxon would struggle with Dembele like we did. I do think they're a bit of a different animal to face up against. And I've had a chat with Tom on his podcast as well from It's Not Orange podcast about this in a bit more depth. But do we know if Moxon can play in this game? I mean, obviously he can play, but do we know if his yellows are nullified? I think Freddie was saying something about the Sunderland Echo to me over WhatsApp that it's like 37 games or something where it gets wiped. So in theory, I think it's another game. Because if you look at Oxford, if you look at Blackpool's midfield, they're really strong in the middle there. I sort of think that after MPH's first half against Oxford not being the best, maybe, that you got to just roll a dice, start Moxon, and now you've got Lee Evans there as well, coming into the fitness, that you might be a bit more willing to risk going Moxon?
I think you have to. I think you have to play your best players in the best position against the best teams. Again, more really advanced analysis from me. And Blackpool away, statistically, is one of the toughest games of the season. As away days go, their home record is excellent. And if they were anything approaching competent away, other than Fratton Park and Peterborough and Barnsley this season, they'd be far higher up than where they are. Even they're not even a bad place on the table. So I think you have to play Moxon. And if he ends up getting a yellow and missing a game or two, I mean, it's Burton the game following. So I'd rather be missing Moxon for Burton at home, with all due respect to them, than I would be playing MPH in that defensive role where I don't think it suits all of his attributes best in this sort of game. Because as you say, Blackpool's quality in centre midfield is there. They are, that's probably the strongest area on the pitch for them, I would say, centre mid. And we need to be able to nullify that. And therefore, you need your best players. I do think one thing that's going to work to our advantage in this game is having Ogilvy fit again at left back. Because where we really got hurt in that 4-0 was their diagonals, particularly towards Sparks playing at left back. And they were winning all of those first balls and then running onto the knockdowns. And I do think having Ogilvy playing at left back rather than Sparks in terms of winning those first headers, I don't think the same tactics are going to work quite as well this time, because Sparks has got his excellent attributes, but defensive headers is not high on that list, whereas Ogilvy it is.
Andrew meshes in and says, can't be complacent. Blackpool mixed bag at home. If you don't play sloppy like we did at home and keep it simple, we should win. I think a draw would still be a good result regardless. Freddie, do you think a draw away at Blackpool is a point gained rather than 2 points lost?
And that would have to depend on the performance itself, but I wouldn't mind a draw if you'd offered it to me now. I think Blackpool have still got an awful lot of weapons. They don't have Kenny Dougal in the midfield anymore, but they replaced him with Joe Byers on loan, and we know how good Joe Byers is at maintaining the play with some excellent passing, and he's got a very good passing range, so that's going to be an issue for Pompey. I think obviously Karamoko Dembele is, I still don't know how he's playing in League One. He's an exceptional technical player, and we'll probably go through more Blackpool strengths later on in the interview coming up, but they're still a strange side. They still somehow, they're able to score lots of goals in certain periods, but then just throw games away randomly against sides that on paper at least aren't as good as them. I think it would be massive Pompey to have their full complement back four again, a more stable back four, while also having a proper number 10 playing in the middle rather than Abu Kamara playing out of position. I think those two things would make a massive difference, but it's still not going to be an easy game.
Dean Meshin, he says, even for a 4-0 result, the game was fine margins before the red card at 2-0. Just play the way we have been since mid-January and we'll be fine. There's a reason this team's only lost 4 games all season. It's one of those ones, isn't it, where you want to win, obviously, and keep up the pressure. But again, a point, I don't think it's a bad shout. I think Blackpool will obviously be concerned about us as well as a team, and they do have some problems in behind. We should be able to get in behind them if possible, stretch the back three with our wide players. But yeah, I think it can be doable. So I'll agree with that. Si meshes in, it's going to be a tough match, but we have the talent, the manager, the backroom staff and the fans to beat anyone. We need to be on our A game and believe in ourselves. Can't wait for Saturday as it's new ground. It's all in our own hands. Enjoy the ride. Play out Pompey. It's all in our own hands, thanks to some pretty shoddy results from teams around us, really. And things going well for us. The more draws that happen between the teams around us, the better, really. And then we just got to go and get some points against those teams. If we can draw against those teams and keep picking up points, then we are home free. But yeah, I do agree that this is a different team to who played against Blackpool and lost. John English messaged in and says, lads, it's going to be a tough away game anyhow. We didn't lose Poole long before. With just the players we had against Oxford, I think we'll make a chance. I think we've got a good chance, yeah, with the new players. It was good to see it the weekend. So hopefully if their team are more sober than I was, we can all be all good with that. Matt messaged in and says, the result. I mean, yeah, the result. The result's got to change. But let's be honest, boys, we're going to find out more about this in the Blackpool preview. So I'm just going to rinse into it now. And sorry to everyone for... Sorry, Andy, you want to say something?
No, I was just going to say, in terms of it being a point gained if we pick up a draw, I think we have to assume this weekend coming that the teams around us aren't going to drop points. They've got they've got easier games than us. So Bolton have got Exeter away. Derby County have got Bristol Rovers away. Peterborough have got Burton away. And... Barnsley, they've got Lincoln at home. Have I said that one? Basically, all the other teams in the top five have got games where you imagine they're going to get all 3 points. I'm naturally going to put a four-way bet on it to make sure that one of them does drop points. I'm going to bet on all four of them. But I think that you have to say it's going to be a decent point for us, even if a couple of other teams make 2 points back on us, just because of the difficulty of the games.
Freddie, does that concern you? You think we should just have to get 3 points in that situation? We've got enough of a cushion now that we can just have this difficult game, still pick up points, and that's how you get promoted.
Oh, tough one, isn't it? It's very hard to look at other teams' results and then get angst over it. I still think a draw would be acceptable for the team, just even if there are wins elsewhere. Because I know Pompey's run-in is tough. I think the crunch period will be just playing against those sides that are around us against Bolton, against Barnsley. And if those results come out in Pompey's favour, they should be fine. Or at the very least, draw against those teams and then win the others. But ultimately, Pompey just have to keep putting points on the board. And it's going to be a very tough game against it at Bloomfield Road. It always is. Always is.
Hugh, if I offer you 4 points from this and Burton, are you snapping my hand off? Or is that not enough for you?
I'm happy with it, I think. I am happy with it, yeah. Yeah. I think we need to at least win one of those games. And I think Burton is a must win. And this is a point is okay. A win is obviously better. I mean, that's not magic, is it? That's
more
not
advanced stats. We're so good this week. The level of depth we're hitting is new. That Buy Me a Coffee money people are donating, it's going towards high advanced metric research.
Exactly. Freddie needs to jump in with some sort of stat. We're going to look really stupid now.
I don't have many to hand, to be quite frank. for a change. I know. It's not usually like me.
No, let's wrap this up. And let's get on to the next bit. Let's get on to the Blackpool preview. We spoke to Tom from the It's Not Orange podcast to preview the thing about the game on Saturday away at Blackpool. We spoke about their centre midfield, how dominant they can be. CJ Hamilton, how he's sort of one of those players that always comes up big against Pompey. And just whether Neil Critchley will tweak how he plays, or whether it's all Critchley ball. Here's Tom from the It's Not Orange podcast. All right, I'm here with Tom from It's Not Orange podcast. And Tom, thanks for coming back on the show.
No, you're welcome. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Obviously, last time out wasn't a lot of fun for Pompey fans as you absolutely took us apart at Fratton Park. It's a bit of a tongue twister for myself there, but how has it been since then, since you've last played? Your results seem a little bit up and down. You're obviously in touching distance of the playoffs. And you know, how are Blackpool fans feeling for the run-in?
Pessimistic, I would say, just due to the away form, which is ironic because we couldn't win away when we went to Fratton Park. And I think everyone was still pinching themselves the next day. But we sit third for the home form and about 14th, 15th for away form now. So we've won 5 away, lost 9. Even if you half those losses and make them wins, we're up there in the top sort of 4 or 5. So the inability to set up, drive ourselves away from home has left Blackpool fans feeling left wanting. To be 4 points away from the playoffs and to have lost that many away is absolutely bamboozling, and I can't put my finger on it because the home form has been very good.
Tom, what are the reasons that that is the case? It's unusual to have such a big disparity between home and away. What is it in terms of setup that has meant you've struggled so much away from home? Because for our listener base, all we've seen from you away from home is an absolute shellacking. So what's been the difficult stumbling point for you away from home this season?
I don't know. It's been terrible, to put it bluntly. We've set up the exact same way to Blackpool fans frustration for 95% of the season, with the odd change here and there. Same team, same lineups, same players, of course. No idea. We've had no shots on target against Leyton Orient, no shots on target against Burton, one shot on target against Cheltenham. It's been a disaster. We lost, always lost 3-0 to Port Vale, 2-0 to Cheltenham, and it's been less than accepting. And a lot of the time in a lot of teams, it would have been made, in my opinion, the manager be sacked. I've done many episodes of the podcast trying to analyse it, and we've come up with the synopsis that we've just been absolutely poor. The players doesn't seem like they've tried. The setup's been all wrong. There's been no rhyme or reason to it. We've not been in many away games at all. When we have won away, you know, they've been fairly decent wins, and we've been excellent, such as Portsmouth and Peterborough as an example, and Barnsley, ironically. And obviously on the weekend, we just beat Shrewsbury. So there's your 4 away wins. 3 of them come against very decent sides in the playoffs, and Shrewsbury are one of the worst teams I've seen in League One. So, other than that, we've been destroyed by organised teams that know how to play football. Cheltenham know how to defend, and they know how to put the ball into the box, and we just can't cope with it. There's no rhyme or reason to it. We've just been unacceptable away from home.
suppose looking at your midfield, one player I was going to focus on you brought in is George Baez. He's a player that Pompey fans will know when he's here is popular, but maybe didn't reach potential just how he's utilised. But I see him playing in the centre currently of the sort of the five you got in midfield. Does George drop deep and collect the ball and sort of play a playmaking role, or is he allowed to sort of more of a box-to-box sort of player for you?
Definitely box-to-box so far. It's obviously a very small sample size, but the guy uses quality, and it's, I've said all year, Blackpool good enough, and you can, you know, argue from the home form being first for most of it. Now teams have played their game in hand, now third, that we are good enough. But when you have players like Karamoko Dembele, George Byers, Jordan Rhodes as an example, you start seeing pitch intelligence and you start seeing your team play in another dimension. And since he's come in, you could absolutely tell that he knows how to play football, and he knows how to get a team ticking over. So he's very much had a fair few shots on goal, but also, you know, picked up the odd yellow card and clinical fouls, and got into the ref's ear against Peterborough when Joseph went down for the penalty. And you know, he's just got a lot of experience. But yeah, he's very much been, you know, a ticking cog in that midfield, and it's certainly helped Oliver Norburn step up his game because he's been way off the pace recently.
Yeah, I think in terms of Byers, I think he just had a bit of a bad run with Kenny Jackett as his manager while he was here. It sounds like they didn't have the best relationship from what we heard. So it's nice to see him doing well, albeit hopefully not this weekend coming up. Karamoko Dembele is a player that, I mean, I rate pretty highly. I know that Freddie, who's not here on this particular bit of recording, does as well. Obviously, he's going to be one of your danger men. In terms of how you're going to line up against us, are we likely to see the same formation with that three at the back that was so effective last time round? Or are you trying different things away from home to try and stop that away form slide?
No, we haven't changed formation once this season. This is what I said. We've 95% of the time we've played 3-5-2. So no, we'll play 3-5-2 Saturday, and if we don't, I'll eat me hat. But obviously at home it's a lot more organised, and we've been in games a lot of the time. The recent win against Bolton was excellent, you know, and we actually played 3-5-2 the way it's meant to be played. We used our wing backs exceptionally well. Ironically, Hamilton, who I think it was two assists, wasn't it, or a goal and assist against you guys last time, got man of the match that weekend, is one of the worst wing backs I've ever seen. And it's not down to his ability to play football in an attacking sense. He's just not a wing back. So when we played Gabriel and Coulson on the wing as wing backs, we absolutely destroyed Bolton, and they couldn't cope with it. And we got the ball out wide really well. And then Dembele came into the middle, drifted into those pockets and set up a couple of goals as well. So you'll see a 3-5-2. If we play like we did against Bolton, it's going to be one of the best games of the season, in my opinion.
Yeah, it looks like it. And one thing I was going to ask you, is Jordan Rhodes been injured, has he? Because he seems to be coming off the bench a little bit. I'm guessing he's coming back to match fitness in that sense with Beasley and Lavery starting up front.
He's been injured all but for Saturday, yeah. So he came off on Saturday against Shrewsbury at 1-0 and immediately started finding really good pockets of space and running the channels and stretching the defence immediately. It was a joy to see. When I alluded to pitch intelligence earlier, him coming on and just being so much different to Lavery and Joseph and Beasley, and the way he utilises space is excellent. He didn't score an eight before his injury, and he's still only two goals off the top goal scorer. That just shows you how good he was previous to his injury. But not scoring in seven or eight games and still being two away, as well as being out for the last six or seven, the guy's just exceptional. And he looked sharp Saturday, if I'm honest, for a 20-minute cameo. He looked really good. If he doesn't start, I won't be shocked. I will be annoyed if he doesn't start, though.
Yeah, you've got to look at him, really, haven't you? And just minutes per goal, 142 minutes per goal, just to compare to Bishop, I suppose, at 178. But he's absolutely clinical at this level, isn't he? And you just know he's going to score goals. So let's hope he starts on the bench for Pompey's sake there. But just looking at your defence, Matthew Pennington, I thought it was a shrewd signing when you picked him up before from Shrewsbury. No jokes there, actually. But Egbeteta again in the centre, solid, did really well. And Husband, again, at this level, has done really well for you at the back there. Is there any way that potentially, if we say we started Kasinga Yengi up front, who likes to get in the channels, stretch defence at a three, and sort of, you know, divide and conquer, I suppose. Do you think that would be more effective than playing someone like Bishop, who you maybe play up to and play around?
I prefer Bishop, despite his, I think, 18 goals and assists this season, purely for that fact you just explained, really. Husband is an okay defender. He's better in a back four. Marvs is better in a back four. Peddington is exceptional in a back four or a three. They're both not ball-playing centre-backs, both Marvs and Husband. So put the pressure on them, drive down those channels, and you'll beat him for pace. You won't beat Marvs in a defensive one-on-one, in my opinion. I think he's one of the best in the league at that. I believe so. We've played against really decent strikers at home this season, and you know, they've had a little bit of luck. But other than that, really, speed and getting in behind has hurt us a lot more at home. Alfie May did it a lot of intelligence up front for Charlton. We drew 1-1 with them just after they sacked Appleton. And you could just see at one point he was going to have a chance, and his shot caused an own goal from Marvs, who stretched the leg out to try and block the ball, and it got deflected in. So I would be much more fearful of Yenge than I would Bishop, 100%.
In terms of, it feels like a way away from now, but the January transfer window and players that you've potentially brought in and lost. Obviously, Owen Dale went off to Oxford and left you guys. Have you brought in, I suppose, other than George Byers, who obviously is a very different style of player, have you brought in any sort of like-for-like replacements for Dale? Did any other players come in? Do you feel like you've strengthened? There's a lot of head shaking going on there.
Yeah, because we didn't. I mean, Byers was an exceptional signing. He really was. And I'll be honest, we needed to replace Kenny Dougal, who played against you last time at Fratton Park. And Byers, in my opinion, is an upgrade from him, as much as I absolutely adore the bloke. He's just got a lot more intelligence. Both of them would have been brilliant in the same team, but Byers came in. And we also brought in a defender from Burnley, Sassy, who's gone on loan since to Rochdale. We needed a left centre back, if I'm honest, left footed centre back. But no, we didn't replace Dale, nor did we really need to. He played wing back a lot of the season. Obviously, he scored against you guys a really good goal. And I know he tried to haunt you again on Saturday with the penalty win. But you don't want to see him at Fran Park anymore. But no, we didn't. But we didn't also need to, if I'm honest. I agreed with Critchley. I think bringing in Byers, no one was really complaining. You know, another talent, another winger or another sort of forward-thinking player like Karamoko would have been absolutely brilliant. Maybe another striker. But because we play a 3-5-2, bringing in a winger wouldn't have really done us any favours, because they don't often play wing-back like Critchley made Dale do. So,
just before we get into the score prediction side of this, how have these teams who have come to you, obviously, you said you're third in home form, but you know, if there is a weakness when you're playing at home, how have teams managed to get at you?
Speed, clinicalness, everything Portsmouth are, if I'm honest. You're going to be in a much stronger setup this time than you were at Fratton Park. I'm under no illusions that you had four or five players out, red card. We had momentum, but it was a very up and down, wasn't it, with the unbeaten run. It was some hard-fought draws in there and a couple of decent wins, but you know, it wasn't like you won seven in a row and you're absolute fire when we came. I still think we played well. But yeah, everything you are, the clinicalness, the chances created, the speed, the quality you have is everything that's going to make it a really good game. Now, Bolton were and are a fairly decent side, but you are the level above Bolton in terms of your ability on the pitch, the way you set up, the way you chop and change formations, the way you have the ability to attack sides with ease, if I'm honest. I know sometimes you do get frustrated, but you know, you're top for a lot of the stats before going into it all now. But yeah, you're just a very good side. So you probably will be the best side and are the best side away from home in the league. So it's gonna, if we manage to get a win, and not that I'm predicting that for 30 seconds time, but if we do get a win, it really lays a marker for what we can do and what we potentially could achieve in the next 10 games.
Yeah, so let's see before we get into the score predictions. I think in the last five, you've won four of them, drawn one. So hopefully they can turn it around. We made this joke to the guys from Charlton Live who came in the podcast. You know, this doesn't mean anything, they said. You know, all that history doesn't mean anything. And still, we didn't beat Charlton, so let's see if that haunting narrative happens. But
yeah, they were like 19 games without a clean sheet before playing against us, and we were like, oh, this will be the one, don't you worry. And they were saying, no, we don't keep clean sheets, we will concede. And sure enough, it was their first clean sheet for 20 games. So There's a rhyme and reason to this stuff.
You still think, though, to be fair, that Nathan Jones has come in, and you talked about them coming to you as well, Tom. And yeah, they're just a different team now than they were earlier in the season. Different system. You think when they had Appleton, they just looked like a better team. Without turning this into a Cholton analysis here, they just look like a different side. So, all right, let's get into this, Tom, before I come on your podcast and have a chat to you. So I want to know your score prediction, please, for the game on Saturday and any goal scorers.
My head says 3-1 Pompey. But my heart says 2-2. Like you said, the record against you guys is decent. We've only lost 4 games all season, 2 at home and 2 away, ironically against sides you'd expect to beat at home, obviously, with Leyton Orient and Blackpool. But I think it will be an up-and-down game. If you can get an early goal, then, or to be fair, Bolton did that, but if you can get an early goal, I think you will take advantage of that with the quality you have. If we score first and you know, we have an opportunity to get a second, you know, we are decent at taking control of games at home, like Bolton found out. But I'll go over 2-2. I think it'll be a good game. And on paper, it's a really good result. But we need nothing less than 3 points, unfortunately, if we're going to start building momentum for this playoff run. But I'll say 2-2.
A really quick one to end. If you do go a goal up, are you expecting the side to continue doing the same and pushing for a 2-3 goal cushion? Or would you expect it to be score and then change the game plan a little bit?
A big criticism of ours, we haven't changed the game plan. We try to pass a lot without being, I know we have like accurate long balls and stuff like third in the league for it, but they hit a player, but we don't make a move from it. So it's a bit of a false stat, if I'm honest. No, I just think it will be very much the same. I think when Dembele's in form and if he can get Rhodes in behind and if he starts and Gabriel and Coulson on as wing backs, we will just naturally create opportunities and they will come because you're an attacking side. It's naturally going to happen. It's just whether we can continue with that. I wouldn't be surprised with a decent victories, because what Blackpool did at Bloomfield Road against really good sides, it just happens sometimes. But I don't think we'll change and try and defend, because it's literally pointless against a side of your quality. We saw it. I know it's a level above, but United try and do it to City, didn't they? And it just fails miserably most of the time, because eventually you'll find a way. So I'd be shocked if we try and defend, because the 3-5-2 set up to counter-attack most sides like yourself. So, yeah.
All right, nice one. Let's turn this around on your podcast. Before we do it, Tom, let's tell people where they can find your podcast and hear more of me and you chatting.
Yeah, so it's on most streaming platforms. It's called the It's Not Orange podcast. Yeah, we're on X as well under the same name. Yeah. Listen, obviously it's Blackpool based, but there's a couple of really good specials in there. We've just done Ian Holloway. That was 2.5 hours. It could have been 5. But for any football fan, it's a really, really good listen. And I think in a week it's had well over 1,100 plays for a Blackpool, you know, based podcast. It's really good. But the guy's just mental, isn't he? And it was an honour to speak to him, of course. So I didn't think I'd ever get the opportunity to do that. So if you want to listen, it's a really good one.
Yeah, go and check that out, people. But Tom, thanks for coming on the podcast. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Good luck Saturday and good luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks, Tom, for coming on the podcast. This is going to be a difficult game, boys, isn't it? We know it already. We spoke about it. We discussed it with Tom. How are we going to see it go? We talked about whether we'd take a point or not. But what I want to know, Andy, is how you think the game is going to go. Do you think this is a game that we can get out, get that first and all-important goal, and maybe a Moxham pack partnership? You can help stamp some sort of, well, can stamp some sort of authority on the ball and get us playing properly.
I think potentially, yeah. I have more hope than I potentially thought I would have, partially because what I said earlier about Ogilvy being back and, you know, Rafferty being fit as well. And I also think that at that stage in the season where we lost 4-0 at home, we really struggled playing against 3 at the back. And since then, I think the time after that would have been Bolton was the next time we faced 3 at the back and had a very different result. And Messino obviously had worked on how to play against 3 at the back with, I mean, in that case, it was Santos that was the big centre back. But I think we've potentially found a route to play against that formation that we didn't have figured out last time we played them, because I guess rather than Santos, you're looking at Pennington or Ekpeteta at the back, or possibly Husband. I think that's going to be the back three, right? So it's one of those things where I would potentially, I don't say this often, I'd like to see Yenge start, because when he played against Bolton, he taught Santos a thing or two. It was kind of a Yengi masterclass, wasn't it, that Bolton game? And it really suited playing against three at the back who were potentially not as mobile as, you know, most cruise liners. So I think that there's potentially a place for him in the side. I would not be opposed. If we're going to play the 4-2-3-1, it's one of the few games in the season where I'd say, yeah, I can see a strong rationale for Yengi starting over Bishop. I don't think that will happen, but I would quite like it if it did.
I'd probably agree with you, Andy, actually, because looking at the wing-backs that Blackpool play, and we said this beforehand in the Fratton Park fixture, but it didn't really go very well. CJ Hamilton and Hayden Coulson, they're very attacking wing-backs. Very, very attacking wing-backs. And if Pompey can counter-attack quickly, then that isolates the back three. And having Yengi, who's a bit more mobile, but also Callum Lang in behind with Kamara and Lane on the wings, that's a very mobile front four who are able to get in between those gaps and exploit those. So, no, that's a very good change. And I think Pompey need to play the ball in behind the wing-backs an awful lot to have any chance of getting 3 points out of this.
All right, let's get into it. Andy's got Guida out to give his score prediction. But Freddie Webb, I want to know your score prediction, please, on the game on Saturday and the goal scorers.
I think I might go with my head for this one. I'm going to go with a 2-2 draw. I am going to go with Cassini Yengi scoring. He's going to score at some point. And I'm going to go with a goal from Marlon Pack. He's been superb recently. He's got 8 assists from deeper in midfield now this season, which is insane. That's where they're going to get the goals from. And then Blackpool, I think CJ Hamilton the score, and Jake Beasley will get the other one.
All right, 2-2. Andy Mitchmore, he's got 2-2. What are you saying?
I'll go with a 1-1 draw. I think it's one of the toughest places we're going to have to go this season. And genuinely, at the end of the year, I think we'll look back and say that a draw wouldn't be a bad result. Obviously 3 points would be great. But I think this isn't going to be a game that if we come away with 1 point, it's a case of, 2 points dropped, you know, the ceiling's going to fall in. I'll go 1-1, head and heart for me. How about yourself?
I'm going 1-1 as well, because I gave this prediction already on Tom's show. And I can't remember who I gave the goal to. So this is going to be great. 1-1, and whoever I said on the other podcast, go check it out. It's Not Orange Podcast. With me and Tom, we did a half an hour preview going into a bit more detail on it, so go check that out. But all three of us are predicting a draw. All right, Andy Mitchmore and his hamster Guida, it's been great having your podcast.
Thank you, bud. Always a pleasure. Glad you're now over your hangovers. Lovely to be out with you last week, and looking forward to seeing you lads soon. Burton at home, that'll be the next one. I've got a miss this weekend, so yeah, Burton at home will be the next one.
Freddie Webb, it's been great having your podcast.
I always brill to be back on. Favourite part of my week. And thanks for the listeners again for continuing to stick with us.
Yeah, nice one. And shout out Jake, shout out Tom, shout out the boys from Rotterdam for having a great weekend with us. But until next time, play up Pompey.
You have been listening to the PO Forecast for Pompey News Now. Available on SoundCloud, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Follow PO Forecast and Pompey News Now on Twitter for more information.
And there is the full-time whistle.